This is WSBT's Community Update on 96.1 WSBT.
Good morning. I'm John Hoffman. A new local partnership is looking to help South Bend schools fill a long-standing teacher shortage. Students at IU South Bend have the chance to get their master's degree for free if they commit to teaching in the city. The expectation is that students will stay and teach for 3 years after they finish their master's.
And teachers at IU South Bend hope they teach here even longer. This program stems from a grant South Bend schools recently received. Right now, South Bend Schools has nearly 24 teaching jobs open. That's according to the district's website. School leaders hope this new program will help them reduce that number. Most of those openings are math and science. IU South Bend says it plans to use coursework in the graduate program to focus on those areas to help best prepare teachers to enter the classroom.
When they graduate, they are going to be able to be hired in at a higher level on the pay scale. So there's a financial benefit for the teacher candidates while they're undergoing the master's program because they're going to have a master's degree that's completely paid for. They're going to receive a living wage.
Up to 20 teachers each year are eligible to participate in this program. It's set to begin in the spring.
WSBT 22's Bree Isom reporting. How could South Bend Schools Empowerment Zone for underperforming schools improve its chances of succeeding? WSBT 22's Tolly Taylor took a trip to Massachusetts, where one of the models for South Bend is now in its fifth year of operation.
I talked to around 24 people in Springfield who have a vested interest in seeing things change. Parents, teachers, school administrators, the mayor, advisory council members, all people who want to see the 11 schools turn around. One person told me, "It took a long time for these schools to get like this, and it could take a long time to bring them out of it."
One of Duggan Academy's new creations is underway. This is a crew, or school advisory group. Every morning, these students meet to eat breakfast together and have group discussions before classes start. Today's topic, favorite desserts.
My favorite ice cream.
The idea is to give these kids a consistent group and teacher they stay with throughout their time at the school. It's one of the many changes that school leaders credit for taking Duggan from the bottom one percentile in the state out of underperforming status.
If they do it the way the Springfield Empowerment Zone model is done, it will work.
That's Mayor Dominic Sarno's advice when I ask him what the South Bend Empowerment Zone can learn from Springfield. The Empowerment Zone started there in the 2015-16 school year, and you find all the same metaphors there for the process of turning around these schools that you'll find here. Building the plane as you fly it, climbing the mountain, and of course,
there's no magic dust when you're turning around high poverty urban schools. It's hard work, it's engaging.
Superintendent Dan Warwick's right. It is hard work, especially when you consider another similarity between Springfield and South Bend. Students are leaving for charter schools and school choice programs, and it's draining the district of money. One study conducted by the State Budget and Policy Center found the district was underfunded by $94 million. And the Empowerment Zone schools have the same dollars that the rest of the district has. It just gets more autonomy and flexibility with how it uses those dollars.
All the schools aren't going to progress at the same rate. It has a lot to do with the capacity of the leader, how long they've been there, their ability to bring in the kind of staff you need.
Four of the 11 schools have made significant progress since the zone took effect in 2015-16. But what about the 7 schools that haven't?
Principal, he or she is the key. You could have a Taj Mahal of a school, but if you don't have a good principal, it's not gonna flourish.
The consistent message I heard over and over again, if the principal and teacher leadership teams in each school aren't truly collaborating, it doesn't work. And the zone leadership knows it.
To date, only 3 of the original principals within the zone are now in the position of principalship because of the demands of the role and the demands, the accountability demands that we have for schools.
So can South Bend replicate Springfield's successes without duplicating its failures? It's much too early to know that answer, but the Empowerment Zone has started with one additional disadvantage, planning time. Springfield zone officials had 7 extra months to plan before their school year started.
WSBT 22's Tolly Taylor reporting. Thousands of students were impacted by a malware attack on the Penn Harris Madison school system Tuesday and Wednesday. Students were unable to look at or turn in assignments, and all of the school district's internal servers had to be shut down. WSBT 22's Brooke O'Daniel reported Wednesday evening there was some good news. Students' personal information does not appear to have been compromised.
The school system has personal files on every student, including copies of their birth certificate. In this email update this afternoon, the school alleviated concerns and said the IT department did not see any evidence that any information from the school district had left their servers. Parents of students in the PHM school district were surprised when this email was sent out yesterday afternoon.
There's been an issue. Everything's down. No assignments or things like that could be submitted last night.
Gaglio says her daughter didn't feel well this morning and was late for school. But she didn't receive a phone call like she normally does.
You'll receive a phone call generally at 11 o'clock if you have not called for a student absence and your child is not in school in the morning. It'll say, like, this is PHM, your child has been marked, you know, absent in one or more classes of the day.
The IT department had to shut down all of the school district servers after detecting malware yesterday.
Well, last night it shut down and there's a big riot saying not to go on Canvas for schoolwork or anything, so I guess they're just trying to figure that out.
Pritz says he was frustrated because he had his homework ready to turn in.
As long as I get full credit for them, I can't be too mad about it, but it is a little frustrating when you have to do them on time, but you just can't turn them in.
The school district says it does not believe any student information has been compromised and that the Canvas system is back up and running again.
Canvas is the system the district uses for students to see assignments and turn them in.
The system that's used to track attendance was down a little longer, but is now back up and running again as well. Embattled Republican Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill has announced plans to seek re-election in 2020. The former Elkhart County prosecutor recently faced a lawyer discipline hearing for professional misconduct. He's accused of drunkenly groping four women at a bar last year. Hill is awaiting a decision from the Indiana Supreme Court Disciplinary Commission. If the court were to rule against him, he could be disbarred and forced to leave his job. In a news release issued Thursday morning, Hill made the announcement he's running for re-election, touting his performance in the job and insisting he will not back down from what he calls partisan attacks. A number of Republicans have joined that criticism, asking Hill to step down. Poll workers in St. Joseph County will get more training for next year's election after some problems surfaced during the elections earlier this month. The county's election board discovered some discrepancies in how many people checked in to vote versus how many ballots ended up being cast. The board Thursday said the problems were caused by human error.
It was the first year the county used electronic tabulators and they worked fine. But the problem started when voters tried to insert their ballot into those tabulators. They found discrepancies at 32 polling places, sparking an audit of those ballots. One by one, the St. Joseph County Election Board spent the day sifting through hundreds, if not thousands, of paper ballots, sorting them out and sending them through machines to recount them all over again. This following a review that found 41 more votes were cast than people that checked in on election day.
We noticed that some locations showed more ballots than check-ins, and some locations showed fewer ballots than check-ins.
This was the first year that electronic vote counters were used, which is where they believe the issues began.
Whoa.
The board believes the problem was with the electronic scanning. If someone put their ballot in and it spit it back out, it still would have been counted and they should have set it to the side. However, they believe some people put it back in again, causing it to be counted twice. Some of the biggest discrepancies were found at Jefferson Middle School and Fire Station 6. St. Joe County Clerk Rita Glenn admitted that more training is needed for future elections.
To be truthful, I think it's a very good experience for us to be going through right now with a bigger election next year.
Glenn says since the issues were spread out and the difference was very minimal, no outcomes will be affected. Glenn also addressed concerns that some poll workers were looking over people's shoulders as they voted. WSBT and the clerk's office received several complaints of peeping poll workers, which Glenn says she doesn't tolerate.
We tell them there's no reason for you to look at anybody's ballot. I'm not sure if they do it out of boredom or if they're just don't even realize that they're doing it. But that is something that we will work on in the future.
Overall, County Clerk Lynn says she was happy with how this election turned out. She believes next year will be smoother since people are more familiar with the equipment. However, more training will be implemented to prevent a repeat of this year's problems.
That's WSBT 22's Max Lewis reporting. Some homeowners near New Carlisle woke up to a surprising package in their yards last weekend, a bag with KKK flyers and a pouch of candy. Some who found it were upset.
Especially one man I talked to who reached out to let us know about these documents that he found outside of his home. He says what the KKK stands for has no place in his community or our country.
Just holding it makes me feel dirty.
That's Ray Barreto's reaction to these KKK materials he and his wife spotted in their front yard Sunday morning. It contains a pack of Skittles and an application for citizenship for the Church of the National Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. There's also a paper asking people to, quote, join the KKK and fight for race and nation.
It was kind of like, oh, wow. Very, you know, kind of stunned.
Barreto lives on Timothy Road, just south of New Carlisle. While on his bike, he says he saw some homes on a street and others nearby with the same packets in their yards, too.
Other than littering, there's nothing that they had done that was against the law.
He says the people who distributed the papers shouldn't be allowed to get away with it anonymously.
They thrive on people remaining silent and doing nothing, and that's all it takes for this kind of thing, this evil to get hold. I won't be silent. There's a reason why they wear a hood. If this was so nice and wholesome, they wouldn't have to hide their identity.
The local KKK leader, who has his name signed at the bottom of one of the pages, Eric Orion, sent us this statement, quote, "We, the Church of the National Knights, are your average hardworking Americans who engage our right to freedom of speech, for our literature is not to threaten, but rather find good solid brothers and sisters to stand up for our cause."
Orion also says that his group is not the Klan from the 1920s anymore, but the Southern Poverty Law Center identifies the Church of the National Knights of the Ku Klux Klan as a hate group.
WSBT 22's Caroline Torrey reporting. The parents of a local ballerina who died a year ago are keeping her legacy alive. Rafaela Stroik was a ballerina at Southold Dance Theater in South Bend. November 14th was the one-year anniversary of her death.
She died in St. Louis after accidentally falling into a lake. The Stroik family still remembers the pain they felt that day, but 1 year later, they're creating something special honoring her memory.
They said, "Wow, look at her. She just is so lit up. She's so alive."
Lighting up the stage is something Rafaela Stroik did every time she performed, her most recent performance being Romeo and Juliet in St. Louis last year.
She said, "Dad, did I seem joyful?" I said, "You seemed amazing. You were over the top."
But little did her parents know that performance would be her last. A week later, Rafaela told them she wanted to get away for the weekend.
So that's when she sent us a text on Monday morning and said, "You know, I want to go on a retreat to discern God's will."
She needed to find clarity about her future and decided to go on a retreat at Mark Twain Lake, 130 miles from her St. Louis home.
The next morning, we got the word that her car was found and she wasn't near the car.
Hours before going missing, she's seen here at this church praying. The next day, November 14th, 2018, is when crews found her body, later saying she accidentally fell into the lake.
Traumatic. The worst day of my life. Yeah.
But they're now turning this tragedy into a ray of light by creating a ballet for Rafaela.
And we thought, Rafaela loved ballet. That was her life. She spent all her time doing it, watching it on the internet.
It's going to be a new classical ballet in the tradition of Swan Lake and Sleeping Beauty, a way to honor their daughter, who will live on in their hearts forever.
I would like to believe she lived a great life, and we thought it was just beginning, but it was a beautiful life, and we thank God for every day that we had with her.
And Rafaela's family is hoping to raise $250,000 for the ballet. Right now, their GoFundMe page has more than $20,000 donated, and they want to raise a good chunk of that money by Christmas to hire a composer.
WSBT 22's Lauren Becker reporting.
The views expressed on WSBT's Community Update are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, WSBT Radio, its staff, or management. Join us again next week on Community Update on The Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT.